Good afternoon. How's everybody doing? Woo! All right. Well, I'm Robin Rowe, and we're at the GNOME Conference, in case you don't know. Before I talk about myself, though, I'd like to find out something about the audience. Who here is a programmer? We have a few. Systems administrator. Few. Project leader. Open source? Okay, cool. Linux? FreeBSD? OpenBSD? Solaris? Wow! Cool! Solaris is here in force today. Windows? Macintosh? Everybody is here. This is so cool. Okay, well, this audience is actually fairly representative of the industry that I come from, which is the motion picture industry. Today we're going to talk about how Linux has made inroads into the motion picture industry. And there's actually three things that I want to show you today. I have about 30 slides about Linux and the motion picture industry, about 15 about CinePaint, which is an open source project that I lead. And I also have a movie. This is a trailer for the first movie that I'm aware of anyway, being produced entirely in open source software. And since we have a little trouble with the audio pickup, I'm going to have to hold the mic down to the computer, so it's not going to be up to the broadcast quality here.
The sole survivor of what authorities call the worst cult massacre in almost 100 years says that they broke the light speed barrier.
The government wants it to be
price. What do we need?
Who's talking? The corporations will pay for it. And she's the only one who knows where to find it.
Yeah, that's called stuff. The only mouth you're going after.
My mug up there. I'm Robin Rowe, and I lead a users group. It's called the Linux Movies Group. If you go up to our website at linuxmovies.org, you can find out all about us. We meet in the Bay Area in San Francisco and also in Hollywood on a monthly basis, and we also have a mailing list that goes all around the world. And the way I became involved in all this was I wrote a column. In fact, I still write for Linux Journal. I wrote the column about Linux in the motion picture industry and how that was taking off. And I'll just go into it. I mean, too long. Okay, here's the question of the day. The largest Linux desktop installation in the world uses GNOME. Where is it? What's the company? What is it? Pixar? That's one guess. Anyone else?
DreamWorks.
I like that guess. Microsoft. Next year. Okay. So here are the top Linux desktop installations. $150,000 that are desktops or are there terminals? Wow. Okay. Well, I stand corrected then. Anyhow, at DreamWorks, they have several hundred desktops that are used by animators and for motion picture production, and likewise at ILM, Disney, and Pixar. And this is kind of about rather unexpectedly and very quickly, very rapidly. The motion picture industry traditionally, well, I've got a slide here with Linus here. Just to give context, back in 1991, he said, just a little free hobby operating system won't really amount to anything. So that didn't turn out the way he thought. Okay, why Linux in Hollywood? Mostly it's speed, but it's also cost. The Hollywood movie industry has not traditionally used Windows and Macintoshes for its primary production. Now, they use everything. If you go to a large motion picture studio, you can find OS2 boxes if you look hard enough. But realistically, what they've used traditionally is SGI Irix. Well, those of you that have been following SGI, they stumbled a few years ago, and they're still stumbling maybe a little bit. And as a consequence of this, the performance just didn't keep up with what the motion picture studios were used to receiving. And also, the PC stuff really started to scream. Intel became incredibly fast and very cheap. And then Windows said, well, we'll come in, we'll solve Hollywood's problem, because you'll be able to run things just much faster and much better on Intel hardware running Windows. And a couple of studios did that, or tried to do that, and very quickly they gave up. And the reason was that the large studios have millions of lines of code that they have written that's proprietary, and to port millions of lines of Unix code to Windows, they said, we'll be at it for 10 years, we can't do that. So I looked around and they said, well, what would be just as good or better than using Windows? And of course the answer they came up with was Linux. And initially that was just on the render firm. On the really number-crunching part of the operation. The desktops were not on Linux originally because they lacked appropriate drivers. The motion picture industry does a lot of 3D graphics, and Linux had the worst graphics performance in the industry and now has come to be the best graphics performance in the industry. And that's happened as a result of NVIDIA and other companies porting the drivers from Windows over to Unix over to Linux. In the case of NVIDIA, it's actually a unified driver. It's the same driver running on Linux or on Windows, the same code base. They just recompile it. Okay, HP, IBM, and Dell also came in. They said, we'll help the motion picture studios. In particular, HP made a really big push and ended up teaming with DreamWorks. And then MyoShake and RenderMan. And the reason that these are so important is these are the major applications in the motion picture industry. We have a situation today where, you know, a lot of people may be reluctant to come over to open source because it might not have Word or Excel, or in my case, PowerPoint is the reason that we're looking at this on Windows 98 instead of on an open source system. So in the motion picture industry, it's not like that. In the motion picture industry, the big applications are Maya, Shake, and RenderMan. And these are all available on Linux and deployed on Linux. This is what the motion picture studios are using. Now, the studios use software in a way that maybe is a little unfamiliar to people in this room. They have what they call their pipeline. And whereas a lot of people think about a tool like Maya or Softimage, which are 3D painting packages, and they think about people building a body of work around these tools. But the studios don't think that way. They're inside out. They have their own pipeline, their own back end for how they attach things, and they will put all these other tools on top of them. So if they have to, they do not require third parties to develop software for them. They can build end-to-end their own software, and in fact, DreamWorks is one of the first, was the first to come over with animation with Shrek, and the reason they could do that was that they didn't have to wait on these third-party tools that hadn't been ported yet. So in this picture, we have a animator at DreamWorks working on her Wacom tablet with Linux. That's one way things come in. That's if you're working in animation. The other way that things may come in is if you're doing special effects. So you scan a film scanner, you're shooting 35mm film, and then you retouch it. Who here has scanned 35mm film? Still negative. Okay, if you brought that stuff in, you notice there's dust, there's all kinds of things wrong with it that you have to clean up. And the motion picture industry has the same issue. They've got to clean up when they bring in 35mm motion picture film. And the studios are all digital, by the way. So they will shoot in film, and in some cases now not even shoot in film, but they will scan it, and then from there on out it's digital until they output it again, when they'll output it to film. So it's very much the same process that you're used to with desktop computers, where you may have something that you scan in, but from there on out it's going to be digital until you print it. Now, the compositor is an interesting piece of software. What that does is bring together different elements. So let's say that you create some animated character and you want to put it into a live motion picture scene. That's what the compositor does. It allows you to layer things as you would in GIMP or Photoshop, but in the motion picture sense. And then render, over here we've got a blade rack full of HP Intel boxes here. This is at DreamWorks. You can't quite see them in the back, but those blue boxes are the old SGI boxes, which are mostly gone now, and replaced by these towers that have much higher density. So a whole room full of those blue boxes on bookcases will go away and be replaced with these towers. Okay, here are the studios that I'm aware of that have gone over to Linux. This includes Computer Cafe, which is doing a Sean Connery movie right now. Digital Domain, which did Star Trek Nemesis most recently. Disney, Double Negative, which is in London. DreamWorks, Flash Filmworks, Hammerhead, ILM, Pixar, Rhythm and Hues, Sony Pictures Imageworks, Tippett, and Weta Digital. So essentially, it's the entire industry. Digital Domain was the first. They did Titanic. Titanic was rendered on Linux, and this is so far back that the Intel chips weren't quite there yet, so they're actually running on DEC Alpha. So in Dante's Peak, they ran some tests because they're trying to see if they could mix their SGI Irix boxes and the DEC Alphas for render, and it actually turned out to be a little harder than it might seem because the floating point implementation wasn't quite the same. So that was the first one. Got an Academy Award. People said, hey, Linux works pretty well. Disney was actually the last to come over. Jungle Book 2 was the first movie that they did on a new Linux system. Double Negative is interesting. Double Negative is part of Universal Studios. They're a post house based in London. This is from either Enemy at the Gates or Kevin Curley's Mandolin. They did both of those. And the Stuka that you see here is not a real Stuka because there are no flying Stukas in the world. The Stuka was done in a 3D package called Maya. And I don't know if you can see this, but it's actually a little bit blurry. It has motion blur on it. And that's been done in the render process using Pixar RenderMan. And then Shake was also used on this because there actually aren't that many ships there, and the explosions were also added. So all these elements were composited together. The live footage, some extra ships, the explosions, and the animated, realistically animated aircraft. Okay, this is a shot from Double Negative of Enemy at the Gates. The interesting thing about this is that all this destruction you see behind the aircraft is a background plate, and this is pretty illustrative of what the studios will do when doing special effects. They'll create this huge image that is a background plate, and then in shape they will slide that across the picture, giving the impression that you're actually panning the camera across something that's real. And then again, compositing in the digital aircraft. Trailer stood the first full-up animation that was Linux end-to-end in Shrek. Interestingly, they did this at 8-bit color depth instead of 16. We'll talk more about that in a moment. They actually used GIMP on this some. Flash Filmworks. This is from Collateral Damage. One of these helicopters is real. One is not. Is the one on the right or the left? Yeah, the left is the real one. The one on the right is done in Maya. They decided they didn't have enough helicopters in it when they flew it, so they added more and fix it in post. Yeah! Now we're getting somewhere. Okay, the enhancement here was not the actress's bust line. It was the waves and things that they did like that. Even though these ladies could to some degree surf, they couldn't actually get the cameras into some of the waves because the waves were so big. So they had to fix that stuff up in post. And it's very interesting because you have animation where you have something like Shrek, where the idea is to make an artificial world and have people be conscious that that's all artificial. And then you have things like Collateral Damage and Blue Crush, where you're trying to be very photorealistic, and you want everything to look just right, even though you've had to touch it up digitally. And then you have in between. No. Industrial Light and Magic, this is Star Wars Episode 2. Now, Linux came in the middle of this production, which is unheard of. You do not switch platforms in the middle of a major feature film, because there's lots and lots of money involved that's writing on this, and you don't want to change anything. But what happened was they rolled out a few systems for test and evaluation, and the Linux boxes were 5 times the speed of the SGI IRIX boxes that were being replaced. Now, typically when they do an upgrade, doing a generational upgrade, they'll get maybe 50% improvement. So they were getting 10 times the normal improvement that they would expect in doing an upgrade. And very quickly people said, well, why don't I have the good machine? So very quickly, it just ripped through the entire organization and really put a strain on them because they were not really ready to roll it out quite that wide yet. But user demand just pulled it in. Now, Pixar is an interesting case. They put in 1,024 Pentium processors in their new render farm, running Linux, of course. And Pixar is also a major Linux vendor because they also distribute RenderMan, which is the most popular rendering software in the motion picture industry. They have an interesting CEO, some guy named Steve Jobs. Rhythm Hughes, this is from Scooby-Doo. They're known for their talking animals work. They do a lot of work with 3D animals. And then Sony Pictures, Stuart Little 2. And Stuart Little 1 was done at Rhythm and Hughes. And as often happens with sequels, it ends up in a different studio just because of scheduling or somebody did a better bid or whatever. So when it came over to Sony Pictures, they actually had one of the people that was at Rhythm and Hughes join Sony. And when he came over, he said, well, we should do it like we did the first picture. So that accelerated Linux being adopted at Sony Pictures. And then Tippett, they just worked on a little movie you might have heard of called The Matrix Reloaded. They also did Blade and several other movies. So The Matrix is a Linux movie too. Or Matrix 2 is, I'm not sure about Matrix 1. And then Weta Digital, they're down in New Zealand. They did Lord of the Rings, the Twin Towers, and also Lord of the Rings 1. The first movie was rendered on Linux. The second movie, they had the desktops in as well. And this is very typical of how the studios have rolled out their Linux installations, where they've done rendering first because it's easier, and then rolled the desktops in the next generation. Okay, now here's just a short list of Linux movies. I'm going to run through these real quick. We have Dante's Peak, Titanic, What Dreams May Come, Armageddon, EdTV, Lake Placid, Fight Club, Supernova, Stuart Little Nicky, Grinch, Sixth Day, Rules of Engagement, X-Men, Red Planet, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Enemy at the Gates, Cats and Dogs, Shrek, Fast and the Furious, Dr. Dolittle 2, Final Fantasy, Planet of the Apes, Kevin Curley's Mandolin, yeah, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Storm Rider, that's a theme park production for Disney. Beautiful Mind, that of course got an Academy Award. Vanilla Sky, Lord of the Rings, Collateral Damage, Blade 2, Death of Smoochie, Star Wars Episode 2, Spirit, Scooby-Doo, Haunted Lighthouse, that's IMAX. That's a special challenge to produce as well because the negative is so much larger. Okay, where were we? Haunted Lighthouse, Triple X, Pluto Nash, Blue Crush, Below, Santa Claus 2, Star Trek Nemesis, Lord of the Rings 2, We Were Soldiers Once, Time Machine, Triple X again for some reason, Jungle Book 2, Matrix 2, Too Fast, Too Furious, and Finding Nemo. So a few movies have been done in Linux. You can let people know. And actually, it's interesting, because I'm a journalist, I was speaking at another conference, and someone stood up and said, well, how can this be true? If all of this was done in Linux, surely we'd have read about it in the New York Times. I said, okay, so I called up the New York Times. I said to the editor, would you like to do a story about Linux in the motion picture industry? It's everywhere. It's in all these movies. And we talked about it for a while, and finally I said, nah, it's not really new. All right. Okay. Let's talk about tools for a moment. Maya is a big one. Alias Wavefront, for those who don't know, actually is part of SGI. So SGI is also a major Linux software provider, not only for Maya, but also on their own hardware now, quite a bit, they're running Linux. Shake is an interesting case. That was bought by Apple. So Apple also is a large Linux software vendor. Digital Domain has their new compositing system, which has been proprietary for many years, but now is available. CinePaint, the project that I lead for painting and retouching. Houdini, why do I have Maya twice? Well, that's what happens when you do this at night. Piranha is a nonlinear editing system. That's really more of a television system, but I included it here because it's interesting how many tools are coming over to Linux. Pixar RenderMan, which I mentioned already. And of course, we got Shake again. Okay. Softimage. Softimage is used a lot at ILM. US Animation, they're a 2D animation system, so more like television style animation as opposed to movie animation. And then Wings 3D is an open source 3D graphics package. And not listed on here is Blender. And the reason I haven't listed Blender is, except for that clip that I showed you at the beginning, I'm not aware of any feature film work that's been used on yet. Here's a quick look at Maya. This is from one of the bug movies. We have an ant's eyeball over here, and all kinds of effects being done on it. You can see the difference in the upper window with the 3D model and the render out in the bottom window. This takes a lot of computing cycles to take it from what's in the top window to what's in the bottom window, and that's why they'll have 1,000 CPUs or more in their render farm. Houdini is another very popular Linux system. I think it was used on Matrix 2, among its many other credits. Here's Yoda and Saftimage. Actually, this is, I think, Carrie. This is ILM's own home-rolled version of Saftimage. They have their own caricature software for modeling faces very precisely. Now, I spoke to the artist that worked with this, and it was really very interesting. I asked her what operating system that she was on, and I of course, already knew the answer, but she didn't. She really didn't know what operating system she was using. And she thought it was maybe Linux, but she wasn't sure. Which is good. That means that people aren't being tripped up by what the tool is. Here's some compositing going on in Blade 2 and Shake. This is ILM's proprietary compositor, which had never been seen before, even though it won an Academy Award. Some stuff from Star Wars. And this is Digital Vane Nuke working on Star Trek Nemesis. Toon Shooter, this is DreamWorks' proprietary tool for doing 2D animation. This has actually kind of gone out now because 3D has become so strong. And this is doing ink and paint. After you draw the lines, you have to fill them in, of course. And this is a Maya plugin that DreamWorks did for doing ocean waves, called Calypso. That's used in Sinbad, which is due out any time now. And here's Cinepaint, which is very much like GIMP, which it derived from at one time, and also for Photoshop, for anybody in the room who doesn't know what GIMP is. Okay. For Hollywood, the main thing is that it's faster, because getting these movies rendered out is incredibly time-consuming. DreamWorks, on one of the new movies they're working on, they're spending as much as 8 hours on a single frame to render it. So it's just an amazing amount of number crunching going on, because you know, you're talking about 150,000 frames in a movie, 8 hours a frame. You better have a lot of horsepower. They're using kind of a grid computer. Some people think that Hollywood uses supercomputers, but for the most part, that's not true. It's more like walls and walls of blades being used, much like you would if you were serving up web pages. But instead of serving up web pages, you're serving up individual frames of movies. So the backward compatibility with Unix is key. That's what allowed them to roll it in without disrupting their operations. They like that there's more choices for vendors. And also they like that there's more support, that there's programmers and sysadmins and lots of good people that know how to use this stuff that is much easier to deal with than when it was SGI IRIX, which is very much a boutique, very much a niche type of operating system and really hard to find people that are experts in. Hollywood is also doing some stuff for Linux. There's just the glamour of it. It's a good story. It's interesting that people who thought Linux would come from the bottom and take over consumer desktops, it's really come from the top. It's taken over the most difficult, most demanding graphics environment in the world. So it's now occupied the high ground, which in some ways sort of makes it inevitable that it'll roll the rest of the way down. The render farms, desktops, hardware, graphics, the software, all that stuff has been pushed hard by the studios. DreamWorks pushing on HP, pushing on Dell, pushing on IBM, all the studios doing this sort of thing with the third-party vendors. Saftimage is an interesting story. They said, well, we're not sure that we want to come over to Linux. It seems like it might be a lot of work, and we don't know if there really be that much interest in it. And ILM said, well, in that case, I guess we're not going to buy Saftimage anymore. Oh, you'll have it in 3 months. And that actually turned out to be a really good deal for Saftimage, because the studios, even though they've got lots of money, they're really cheap. And they sort of have to be because they're so big. You know, it seems like a lot of money until you start to spend it. And then it just goes like water. So they had copies of Saftamage that were like three or four versions back. And Saftamage had no idea how many copies they were going to sell, because when they did the conversion to Linux, that meant everybody needed a new copy. So instead of being, oh, well, we'll take some, you know, it was, well, we'll have to take them all. So that was a huge sale to bring all these system conversions over. Now, for open source, CinePaint, which I'll talk about next, that exists because of the motion picture industry. They sponsored it. They did the work on it. OpenEXR is interesting. That's a new file format. Has much better color rendition for applications that need that. And the studios, in various ways, are contributing to open source, either directly by doing little utility things, or CinePaint and OpenEXR, or sometimes indirectly by encouraging HP and other people to develop more open source software. Okay, before I go into CinePaint, you're awfully quiet, which means you're riveted, or you're wondering what this guy's talking about. So do we have any questions? Yes, sir. What toolkits are they using to do the user interfaces? That really varies. Qt is quite popular. A lot of the studios have their own toolkits because they predate. And also they developed their own toolkits anyway for when they were on IRIX, so they brought them forward into Linux. And there's actually quite a bit of discussion going on now in the studios of, well, what's it going to be going forward? Are we going to get behind Qt? Is it going to be something else? Are we going to continue development of our own toolkits? Very much there's a consolidation going on that's been brought about by Linux, where people are looking at all this stuff and saying, well, how much of this do we really need to carry around, and how much is just legacy from, you know, doing IRIX systems and things like that? Who else? Yes, sir.
For motivation, I guess, you know, you're talking about speed and cheapness, and that makes sense on the renderer end of things. Is that the same motivation on the desktop, or are there other, like, it seems like the speed is not as much of an issue if all the rendering is exported to farm.
On the desktop, speed is definitely an issue, and I was at ILM and being given a demonstration of some stuff I think it was in Cary, in Saftamage, one of those tools. And he had his IRIX box and he had his Linux box because they were still going through the transition. And on the IRIX box, when the laser bolts would go, they would look like javelins. And on the Linux box, they would look like laser bolts. And so if you're an artist, it's much easier to work with laser bolts than to work with javelins. So that was what really pressed the desktop to come out in the midst of Star Wars, because the artists that were pushing javelins around said, I can't work this one. This is crazy. You know, give me a Linux box. Okay, well, I'll push on to CinePaint then. I have fewer slides here, so hopefully they won't take very long. Okay, what can CinePaint do? It's a frame-by-frame retouching system. It's very much like the same types of tasks that people do in GIMP and Photoshop on still imagery. Even though motion pictures have an awful lot of frames to them, people still need to be able to reach in and retouch frame by frame, because there's some things you just can't fix any other way. One of those is dust, where you scan an image and, you know, there's just dust and other imperfections on it. And even if you have tools, because the studios just write tons of tools, and they may have some custom algorithm that will go through and automatically clean stuff up, but still, there's going to be some frames where it didn't quite work out. And you want to reach in, and you want to touch those, and you want to do it very rapidly. Now, besides dust busting, you also have painting background mats. As I was talking about earlier, where you have these huge images that you're going to slide around on the screen to give the impression that you're actually shooting something with a camera and panning onto a scene. And then textures is another good use for it. When you're building stuff in 3D models, oftentimes well, almost always you'll need to put a texture on it. Like, for instance, DreamWorks is working on Shark Slayer right now. This is a fish movie. So they have all these fish swimming around, and they need to be kind of scaly and whatnot. So they'll build a texture for that. And they'll want to apply noise to the texture and things like that and try to make it more realistic. So they'll work in a 2D application where they're just building up some nice fancy texture. And then they'll put that back to Maya and apply that to their fish and make their fish look a lot better. Another thing is render repair. There's RenderMan, and then most of the studios also have their own rendering tools, their own render output systems. And all these tools, there's bugs, you know, just like anything. It's software. And so, you know, a character's shoulder might poke through their sleeve. You might have the shoulder on the wrong side of the sleeve here. And, you know, that's not so good. You can't release a movie like that. If it's only for, you know, a couple seconds, it's much cheaper to have someone go in and just retouch it by hand than to re-render all those frames that, you know, they might take 8 hours each to re-render. So even though people think and say, well, how in the world can you use a frame-by-frame retouching system to save time, you actually can when the sequence is short enough or your people are going fast enough through the sequence. Wire rig removal is another thing. That's where you dangle actors or puppets on wires and you need to take the wires out. Film restoration is one that seems to be coming on. I don't know if anyone's doing this yet in CinePaint, but there's talk about it because when you scan those images, they need a lot of work and there aren't a lot of good tools available. Yes? Photoshop. Photoshop is number one in this area. And Photoshop is really badly suited to this task, but the great advantage Photoshop has is that there are an awful lot of people that are expert at using it. And it's very feature-rich, but it does lack a few things. One of those is higher bit-depth color. Photoshop has 8 or 15-bit color. At 15-bit, many of the functions are actually grayed out. Most of the stuff in Photoshop doesn't work at 15-bit. So people work in 8-bit, and those of us that remember the old days where we had 256 color monitors, you could have one window that looks okay, and then you'd move the mouse over, and the false color stuff would take over, and now this window would look okay, and everything was psychedelic on the first window. Well, in film, you have somewhat of the same effect, although not nearly so bad, because film actually has is capable of approximately 10 or 12 bits of logarithmic color. So you get banding where you have a really nice, smooth blue sky. On the computer, it looks just fine because our monitors are 8-bit. And when I'm talking 8-bit, I'm talking about per channel. You know, so RGB, that's 24 bits, 3 times 8. But we're talking about per channel here. So when people are working in 32-bit, with an RGBA image, we're actually talking about 128 bits per pixel. So you've got this really nice smooth blue, looks perfect on your monitor, but when you go to film, it can be banded because the film actually has greater dynamic range than your monitor does. Now, one of the things about CinePaint that's cool is the exotic image formats that it supports. Cineon is the number one image format. I think I've got a slide for this. Yeah, here I go. Cineon and DPX. And DPX is just a variant of Cineon. Most people just call everything Cineon. Cineon is a format that Kodak put out and said, this is what you should use because it very closely matches what film actually does. It's a logarithmic color format. It's not linear, so it's very different from what you're used to in PNGs and JPEGs and things like that. These images are very big. The standard resolution in film is 2K, so you'll have 2,000 pixels wide by 1,100 or maybe more tall. If you're working in IMAX, then it's 4 times that. It's going to be a 4K image that you're working in. So when you work in these images, it adds up. They've got lots of storage. Radiance HDR is another unusual format that we support. That's a high dynamic range type of imagery, as is log-lev TIFF. OpenEXR from ILM is a 16-bit wavelet format. That's very interesting. It is capable of compressing things about in half, where you have photographic images and they need to be perfectly losslessly compressed, and at high color bit depth as well. And also TIFF 32-bit uncompressed images. Yes, sir. PNG in theory supports 16, but I don't think we support it in CinePaint yet. And we also don't support JPEG 2000, which is capable of 16-bit depth as well. But we'd like to. We want to write it. Okay, quick history of CinePaint. Started at UCB as GIMP back in 95. Everybody knows that story. Probably many people in this room know that story better than I do. Back in 98, though, Silicon Grail, which was making a very popular compositor called Chalice, and was interested in open source, said, well, what if we would sponsor GIMP to add 16-bit to GIMP so that we could use this in motion picture work? Because 8-bit isn't really adequate for using with film. And so that's what they did, along with the studio Rhythm and Hues. And for 2 years, that went forward. And then in 2000, GIMP elected not to adopt what they had been sponsored to build and lost their sponsorship. So it went underground. And then about a year and a half ago, I wrote a story about it because I was writing a story about Rhythm and Hues. And I said, well, I heard about this thing called Film GIMP, which until recently is what CinePaint was called. And, you know, didn't you guys work on that? And he said, oh, yeah, in fact, we still use it. You know, we keep the live saber tooth over here. So people were very interested when I wrote the story about that. And very quickly, it emerged that I was the new project leader. The way that this happened is I wrote the story about it, and I said, here's the secret place in CVS where you can pull this out, and we'll try to get up a source tarball to make this easy. Well, Rhythm and Hues never got around to the source tarball, and eventually I put up a source tarball on SourceForge, and then we went forward from there. We've had 17 releases, which is pretty radical for a project that hadn't had any releases until a year ago, even though it had already existed for 2 years. And at the Linux Movies Conference in Los Angeles in February, we had a panel of the original people from Film GIMP, and as was not too surprising, no one could really agree too much on anything. But there was one thing, and that was that everyone hated the name. So that's how it became CinePaint. And with that, my time is over, so I will take some questions. I hope. Yes. The question is, were there problems in moving off of SGI? And yes, there were. And the place that it actually hurt the most was in drivers. And the place where that was the most sensitive was in film scanning and film output. For many studios, some studios are still running their SGI machines just for that. They don't consider it worth it to rewrite the drivers just to support one device. But pretty much that stuff is going away because the vendors are so on board now that the vendors want to do it. They're like, you know, we're all writing Linux drivers anyway, so. Yes, sir.
Ah!
Okay.
I'm curious, that's our question for us. I'm curious what you and your colleagues in the free software film community are doing to advocate to the FDA that they need to stop this kind of policy. My second part of the question is, what can we
Okay, the MPAA question. I love this question because it's very interesting. People think of Hollywood as sort of a monolithic thing, and it's very much not. It would be like saying, well, New York is like this, or San Francisco is like this. And people would say, well, no, that's crazy. There's all kinds of different people in those cities. And the same thing is true in Hollywood. For one thing, there are many studios who really despise the MPAA and don't really want to be part of it, but are sort of drawn into it against their will. So there's that aspect of it. The other thing is that the people that are using the Linux technology are in no way involved. And in many cases, the studios are probably not very aware that they are the top Linux installations in the world, because the people that are involved at the MPAA level are people that do not have a laptop, do not have a computer of any kind in their office. They have four VCRs, and they're all blinking 12 o'clock. You know, that is the extent of their technology insight. So it's not at all surprising that you have all these wacky things come through the MPAA, because these are very much the people who have, you know, have no computer experience at all. So it all sounds reasonable to them. Oh yeah, just outlaw computers. Who uses them? Yeah, we don't need them. But I think that's going to change, and I think it's going to be attrition as much as anything. These people are going to die. They're old. And the people that come in to replace them will come up in a studio where everybody uses Linux, and they'll say, duh! So that's the hope. But who knows what laws will pass in the next 5 years before these people die. So you've got to keep resisting. But I think it's going to get better. Yeah?
Is the Mach port stalled?
What?
Is the Mach port stalled?
The Macintosh port.
The Macintosh what?
I think there's a problem with GTK on Macintosh.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of interesting stuff with GTK on the Macintosh.
It's going on.
We're trying. I also lead a project called GDK plus OSX, and we're trying to finish the port of GDK to the Macintosh. And if there are any big Macintosh programmers here, we could really use your help, because CinePaint really takes just about every free moment that I have, and I don't get a lot of time for GDK plus. In fact, the next thing that I've got to do with GDK is actually work on the Windows port of it, because the Wacom tablet is seriously messed up there. And that's really a big deal. The studios, as I mentioned, use every operating system. That includes Windows and the Macintosh. Flash Filmworks decided to start using CinePaint because it was available on Windows. So when these studios adopt this stuff, they would like it to work. And we're trying to pick up whatever the worst thing is. And the Windows tablet support is one of the real sinkholes that we have now. We would like it to be much better on the Macintosh. Right now what we're doing is running a GDK X Darwin Fink type application. And it's amazing that that works, but that's also not so great. You would like that it not be amazing that your software works. What people go through to install it is just, some people have reported 20-hour installs. You know, 20 hours of machine time, not counting their time. So the GDK OSX stuff, there's a port underway. We would love it to get more help. We really need it. Anybody else?
Talk to them afterwards.
Yeah, so come talk to me. In fact, CinePaint, we desperately need more people on that. I would really love it if people would come help us. And in fact, the question that was not asked, but that I usually get, is why don't you just fix GIMP or whatever? Or why don't you just go away? GIMP is the answer to all problems. The reason for that is, for one thing, GIMP rejected this very software. You know, they said that this was not important, because to them, there's really no reason it should be. And Photoshop has the same type of situation. Photoshop has a huge user base, and the motion picture industry is a significant user, but if you add the numbers, it's maybe 2% of their market. And so they really just don't care at the end of the day. I mean, they would like to accommodate motion pictures, but if they don't, yeah, that's too bad. And the same thing with GIMP. They've got a huge user base, very little of it in the motion picture world. It just doesn't interest them. It interests us. Yes?
Do you intend to move to GDK2?
Do you intend to move to GDK2? I believe the answer to that is yes, but we have so many other problems. One thing that's very interesting is I discovered the Windows version has switched to GDK2 under GTK 1.3. And so I'm wondering how that works and if that could be a sort of interim step that we could take as well so that we don't have to do everything all at once. And also if that might make our Macintosh port easier, because the Macintosh port is really just the GDK part of the port. And it might be easier to finish that port as 2.0 instead of as 1.3. Okay, with that, whoops, yes. Yes, in fact, we're getting a lot of interest from professional camera, from still camera photographers, because of the higher bit depth. But there are some significant problems that we have to overcome that we actually are working on. One is we can't print right now. There's no printing output. That has to be fixed. Even the motion picture studios are not very happy about that because they need to be able to do prints. Not the film. They can print the film, but the problem is to do preview type prints to paper so they can see what they're doing. The other thing is that we don't have the scanner support either. So it really boils down to the device drivers. The software itself, people are pretty happy with what it can do right now. One thing that's interesting with CinePaint and with compositing software, motion picture software in general, you don't have QuickTime and MPEG and stuff like that. What you have is image 1, image 2, image 3, image 4, for 100,000 images or however many images that you have. And the same thing with digital cameras is often the case. That will automatically number the images. So the same tools that make it easy to pop through these images when they're motion picture images also make it easy to go through when you're dealing with still camera images because they're numbered the same thing. CinePaint has a frame manager where you can say next. You don't have to do file open to get to the next image. Talking about speed in the motion picture world, and that's really an important feature there, because when you've got 100,000 images, you don't want to say file open 100,000 times. Yes? How do we relate to Cinelera? We don't. Cinelera, oh God. I'm supposed to be done yet. How do I get out of this one?